protesters dispersed, leaving a messy reminder that democracy can be noisy.
Compton says some in Argentina feel the U.S. still looks down its nose at Latin America. Why is it that airplanes are having trouble staying on the correct runway at the airport in Cleveland? The FAA is investigating at least three incidents where planes have crossed onto the wrong runways at Hopkins International. That airport led the nation with 9 runway errors last year. Don't take your chewing tobacco to the World Series this year. That's the message to the Indians and the Marlins from a group called the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids.
We're asking Major League players, put that stuff away, play the game, show the kids what you can do, be the role models that you are. But don't use spit tobacco. It's a bad habit, and people become addicted to it and eventually die from it.
The campaign's Bill Novelli. This is ABC News.
If your furnace is over 10 years old, it may be costing you more than it's worth. Why ask for trouble? Ask the pros at Sears about a new energy-efficient furnace, because a furnace that saves energy saves you money. You can count on Sears for professional installation and performance guaranteed. And Sears offers flexible payment options. So if you need a new furnace, call 1-800-270-3900 for a free in-home estimate. Not available in all areas. Call Sears now. 1-800-270-3900.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
Vanguard Airlines is on sale through October 24th. Vanguard Airlines can fly you to Dallas-Fort Worth from only $69 each way. Just $69. Or how about flying to Pittsburgh or New York's JFK Airport from only $99 each way? Vanguard, the Midwest premier discount airline, also offers the lowest airfares to Kansas City from only $39 each way. Chicago's Midway Airport from only $59. Denver and Atlanta are just $69. And San Francisco and Washington, D.C. are only $119 each way. And now we offer assigned seating with extra leg room. Some restrictions apply. These 14-day advance purchase fares are each way based on round-trip travel. Seats may be limited and may not be available on all flights. Prices are subject to change and do not include PFCs of up to $6 and $1 per segment FET. Fly Vanguard Airlines to Dallas-Fort Worth from only $69 each way. Call 1-800-VANGUARD or your travel agent today. That's 1-800-VANGUARD.
He came in a little while ago. He was very interested in you. He's got a little Casio or something. He's been really quietly playing on it. So I thought he was, you know, just a musician or something.
He's wearing a tux.
I know. He ordered toast and coffee, and he's been sitting there for about 4 hours.
His hair is slicked back like Jerry Lewis.
I know. He asked about you, so I thought maybe he was waiting to see you to talk to you about something. So I let him stay. He's been very quiet and very polite.
Well, let's just keep it that way. One of the things I like about the diner is sort of a respite from the world out there. I can come here and be alone, just be all by myself. 646-8255, 646-TALK is the number here at the diner. Hiya, folks. Welcome back to the diner at the end of the dial. James Lilacs with you for the next couple of hours or so. I'm a columnist for the Minneapolis St. Paul Star Tribune, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. Today, banged out 2 columns, Friday and Sunday. Sunday is my favorite one. Sunday addresses, I don't know how I got started on this, but I started going off on movie reviewers. In the terms that they use when quoted in the newspapers. The one-word adjectives that are pulled. Read that. Read it, okay? Buy it, read it. Anyway, here at the diner, we just generally chew over whatever we've been occupied with over the course of the day. And if you want food, there's plenty of that. Jeremy is cooking up what he calls, proudly, the Twin Cityan. It's raw tuna in a hot dish casserole. And it's quite delicious, actually. It combines both sushi and the tuna hot dish casserole. This being, of course, the split that has riven the Twin Cities, the preference of sushi versus tuna hot casserole. I know Tommy was talking about this before. On the way to the diner, I was listening to KSDP, and he broached the subject. It mystifies me. I know no one in Minneapolis who eats, likes, desires, craves sushi. But if you want a regional variant of it here, raw tuna right out of the can, chicken of the sea. Got Charlie stamped all over it.
Always trying to bridge that gap, the diner.
You know, right then and there, that, I swear, is a great experiment question. Unfortunately, I think I may be wrong in it. Charlie the Tuna, you remember Charlie the Tuna?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
He's still on the cans.
I can never figure out Charlie the Tuna because the fish had a death wish, obviously. What did he want? He wanted that hook to come down. Charlie was a collaborator. He wanted so dearly to belong to the power structure that if the hook had come down without the note saying, sorry, Charlie, you don't meet the exacting standards of tuna, if that hook had come down without note, he would have taken that thing and driven it right into the roof of his mouth. And willingly. He would have swum up to the boat without them even having to pull him in. That's how anxious. Charlie had a death wish, is what I'm saying.
That's Charlie. Really sad.
Well, it is. But what I can't figure out is why Chicken of the Sea spurned Charlie in the first place. Think about it. Here's a tuna. Now, every other tuna that they ever come across is just a pliant, big, dumb thing swimming in the hundreds of thousands, caught in a net, no way to get out, dies. What's Charlie? First of all, he's standing erect, which for a fish means that he's obviously moving his flippers in such a fashion that we can't see that's keeping him upright. He's aping humankind, and that's something you generally don't see in fish. So obviously he's got that going for him. Two, he's capable of speech. And a fish who's capable of speech, and what's more, clear, understandable diction through the medium of water, has got some vocal quality, some skills that, again, fish just don't have.
He was Starkist, by the way.
Oh, Starkist. Yeah. Starkist, yeah. Thank you. And of course, Charlie was an excellent mimic as well. Even though he was living at the bottom of the ocean, he was able, I believe, to ape a Brooklyn accent.
Yes, right? Yes, he was.
So it goes beyond that, though. Somehow Charlie was so keyed in to the mores and the ways and the customs of humanity. Not only did he learn our speech, the way we stand, the way we gesture, our complex social patterns and organizational structures that he would have to apply himself to in order to become Starkist, he made himself a hat. So the guy's entire life is built around being the best fish that the world has ever seen in order that he may die and just become another hunk of piscine matter in a can. I don't get it. Charlie could have spent a lot of time on the couch. If ever there was a fish in need of psychoanalysis, it was Mr.
He was PR.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you know, this all our tuna wants to be eaten.
Mm-hmm.
So the people didn't feel, it was guilt-free tuna.
Is that what the caller just said there?
No, he just said, sorry, Charlie. And then, you know, laughed. So
the great experiment question, though, would be, who was the voice of Charlie the Tuna? Don't. Just don't. Who was the voice of Charlie the Tuna?
Arthur Treacher.
I think I know. Whose voice is this? I think I know. A lemon toothpick to anybody who can tell me who gave us the dulcet tones for old Charlie. 646-8255. 646-TALK. 1-800-962-0792. And pound 1500. Free call. AT&T Wireless Services. And, of course, you needn't have a Charlie-related theme in order to join us here. Well, last night, if you remember, if you were with us with our conversation at the diner, I was saying that I was dreading going home because I have a house full of children. There are 432 children at my house right now. It's like living in the scenes from Oliver Twist without the dancing and music. So I was terrified last night that when I came home, I would wake up all of the relatives. And every room has relatives in it. We're just stacked. They're stacked like cordwood everywhere. They're out in the back porch with sheets over them. My fear was that I would come home and that I would trip over a glass that somehow had been dropped or forgotten in front of the chair, and I would wake everybody up with a shatter. Well, I come home last night quietly. I open the door, and as I open the door, I swear, I knock one of what I thought was Jasper's big cow shank bones all the way across the room. The thing does a bank shot. It clatters, makes an incredible amount of noise. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe I'd made that much noise. Well, later I found the supposed bone. It was a glass. It was a cup with a note in it from the kids. From Danny, Lauren, and Steven saying, ha-ha, essentially, ha-ha, here's your glass.
Do you want the poison before or after the show?
Good move, kids. But anyway, we've got answers. Let's do them. Dan on a car phone, how you doing?
Hey, Am I on?
Yes, you are, sir.
Zero Mostel.
Nope. Close, but no. You're in the ballpark.
His son?
No.
Oh, okay.
But good job. Good try.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's see. Renee from Brooklyn Center.
Hi.
How you doing?
Just fine. I love your show.
Well, thank you, Renee.
And I like your article.
Oh, well, I'm hitting on all cylinders then.
I feel so privileged to let you know who I think Charlie the Tuna is.
Who would that be?
Herschel Bernardi.
You're absolutely right.
Am I right? I get a lemon toothpick?
You, ma'am, get yourself a lemon toothpick.
You have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, let's go a little farther. Lance, you there?
I'm here.
Was that your answer
as
well?
That was my answer.
Now, if you can tell me the name of the television show. He had one big television show.
Yep.
His shot at stardom.
Yep.
And it was?
Arnie.
We're sick, aren't we? All right, let's just show how much pointless knowledge we have. Arnie was, of course, was about a blue-collar guy who was kicked up from the factory floor all the way up to the executive suite.
Yep.
Who was his boss?
That I do not remember. I can tell you who his wife was.
Oh, who was his wife?
Sue Ann Langdon.
Oh, good. Yes, who was the sort of oddly moon-faced blonde,
yeah,
who had a vogue there in the mid-60s.
Yep.
She was everybody's girlfriend in all of the Mary Tyler Moore productions, I
yep.
think.
Yep. The boss, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but I do remember Arnie, and I do remember Sue Ann Langdon.
And Herschel Bernardi died a few years ago, too, I think.
Yes.
He was also the laughter, he was also the laugh of the Jolly Green Giant, right?
That I have never heard.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He did a lot of work on Broadway, too. He played Tevye on Fiddler on the Roof.
That's probably why somebody mentioned Zero Mostel before.
Yep.
Well, just so you can sleep tonight, Lance, the answer is Roger Bowen.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? All right. Now, I remember Roger Bowen.
And why I remember this, I have no idea.
That's a good point. You're right. That was the guy who always wore the glasses.
Jeremy is just shaking his head now. Of course, this is the guy I gave trouble last night because he's remembering the names of the second of the tertiary robot characters who were seen in the margins of the widescreen Star Wars edition.
Yeah.
I don't know why I should josh at him when I can remember.
Now, I know all that, too, but I was just listening last night.
Uh-huh, yeah. All right, Lance. Thanks a lot, buddy.
You bet. Bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah, he was the voice of the Jolly Green Giant, who, when you think about it, is another alarming, alarming character. Just cast your mind over it. You're living in the valley. Ho, ho, ho. And you're living in a little thatched hut. It's not a technological society. It's an easy life. And then you look outside one day, and there he is. He's about, what, 80, 90 feet tall, would you say?
80, yeah.
A lurid, glistening green. And he's standing there in a dress made out of leaves, hands on his hips, laughing. Why is he laughing? That would be my question. If I was living in the valley, and periodically I would look up and see a giant laughing, I'd want to know why. I think one of the worst things of having a giant come by wearing a dress made only of leaves, I never really saw any indication from the commercials or from the ads. There was never any indication as to whether the giant was wearing foundation garments, whether or not he'd sewn himself some jockey shorts that were underneath that leafy dress. Because if he wasn't, you'd be standing there, and it would be all the more mortifying. Now, he never said anything, though. He just stood there and laughed.
He didn't have to.
Well, I would imagine it would work like this. The first couple of years, you frankly would be just... You'd be terrified. You wouldn't leave the house when the shadow fell. You'd wait for the laugh to go away. You know, maybe he stood there for a week and laughed, and then moved along. And you'd hear him laughing in the next valley and think, it's safe. And then after about 10, 15 years or so, you'd probably get used to it. You'd get used to the fact that a big giant came by and laughed, and, you know, no big deal. Always harmless. You know, your relatives come from out of town. They're shaking. They're losing bowel control and the whole thing. Ah, it's just a giant. He comes around. No big deal. After about 8 or 10 years, this is off the top of my head here. I'm just imagining what it would be like. After about 8 or 10 years, I'm guessing that you'd become very annoyed that the giant just showed up and laughed. You'd be resentful. What's he laughing at? What's so funny, Mr. Giant? It'd be quite possible that there's a joke that he's just not sharing with you. Something he's remembering that the other giants told each other, you know. Hey, but he isn't telling you what he's laughing at. You'd start to resent it. It'd get on your nerves. And then after, I think, about 10, 15 years or so, you'd really start to hate him, and you'd band together with your friends and you know, look for the opportunity, frankly, to bring him down. You know, just bring this guy down. He's the Giants going down next time he comes around and laughs. That's all I'm thinking.
They're digging pits.
Yeah. Now, if the first time the Giant came by and gave gold and silver to everyone, it wouldn't matter. After 15 years of just standing there and laughing, everybody would be digging the Giant pit, getting out huge amounts of quicklime, and being prepared to bring that Giant down. Patrick, on a car phone, how you doing?
Hey, James, how you doing this evening?
Just fine, sir.
Well, I wanted to make a quick comment. Last week, Jeremy was sitting in his grass skirt, and I was kind of had this feeling of Jeremy as the Jolly Green Giant standing behind the grill going, ho, ho, ho.
Think of the Surly Green Giant, and you have a picture. Incidentally, we got that grass outfit that he was wearing off. We got it off over the weekend by using a WD-40.
WD-40. I know you were trying to clip it off on Friday, and it
didn't work. WD-40 got it off. Unfortunately, he was dropping plates all weekend long. That's why everything is on a paper plate this week.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just thought I'd go in and make.
I like that. The Surly Green Giant would be an apt match for the Jolly Green Giant.
Yeah, standing behind the grill going, ho, ho, ho.
Precisely.
Have another jewel bowl.
All right, thanks, Patrick.
You bet.
Talk to you. 646-8255-646-TALK, 1-800-962-0792. There is, you know, there's a Jolly Green Giant in the state of Minnesota. Do you know where? Do you know where he is? He's there. He's laughing at you right now, silently mocking you, his mouth in an eternal rictus of glee, the reasons for which he will never impart. But he's there. Where is he? Well, maybe I'll tell you. Or you can call and tell me, and tell me whether or not you've seen it. I'm sure if you grew up in the town with a giant, it was probably de rigueur on your high school weekends to go and, you know, get smashed at the foot of the giant or something. But, Chris, on a car phone, how are you?
Hey, James, is that Le Sueur where that Jolly Green Giant is?
Actually, no, it's not. I believe he's on the he was on the cans for a while, but it's not Le Sueur.
Okay. Did you ever see the 1950s commercials with the, I think it was an Austrian ski instructor who played an actual giant before they did the animation?
Well, as a young child, the Jolly Green Giant in the ads was real, yes.
Yeah, I think it was in the 1950s.
Yeah, and he was standing in a valley, and he glistened. That was one of the most alarming things about him. He was really an oily giant.
Yeah, and he was kind of grayish. He wasn't even a bright green. And of course, black and white television back then.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Well, I have if you've ever been to my website, you know I have a section of my website called the Gallery of Regrettable Food. And in it, I have an ad from the 60s of the Jolly Green Giant advertising for Niblet's Corn. And in this ad, he is dressed up like a Mexican Jolly Green Giant.
For Mexicorn,
exactly.
Yeah, 1964 in the New Yorker.
Right. And he's got the cob of corn at waist level, and he's sawing at it with a knife, the Freudian implications of which I don't even want to begin to get into. But there's not an image of him that I don't find deeply disturbing on a variety of levels. That's why they came up with Sprout.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
but I was always wondering who Sprout's mother was.
Well, actually, Heidi from St. Louis Park, who's coming up a little later, probably has the inside skinny on Sprout.
Well, listen for that.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye. Incidentally, if you're calling, Jeremy has temporarily stepped away from the grill. He'll be right back to get your call. If he's out there painting himself green, I'm going to be really alarmed when he returns. Really alarmed. Lon from Egan, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, surprisingly so. Given the amount of sleep that I've had in the last couple of moments here, it's astonishing.
Well, but I think you're going to have to come and face the truth that you will never, ever sleep again.
That's entirely possible. That's entirely possible.
It doesn't matter if you've got relatives over or if you've got no relatives there at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, I may look back then to my 30s as the decade of sleep.
Yeah.
The halcyon days when I actually would put my head down on the pillow for an uninterrupted sleep of up to 6 to 7 hours. I'm getting good at it, though. I mean, as you know, I now sleep during our little breaks here. I can just shut it off and turn it on, and I could probably just walk around downtown, lean up against a building, and catch 90 seconds and be rejuvenated for the rest of the hour. So, different skills come into play, that's all I'm saying. Actually, I won't be here at the diner tomorrow night.
You won't?
No.
You'll be sleeping.
I know. Would that I were. I have other duties and obligations. Frankly, you know, the family's in town. We're going to have supper. It makes no point for me whatsoever to just get up and leave because I don't see these people enough, so I'm going to spend the time with them tomorrow.
Okay. Well, you deserve it.
Well, thank you. Anyway, you'd called about fish.
Yes, called about two things, actually. First of all was a related topic to Charlie the Tuna.
Mm-hmm.
As you were talking about his strange suicidal tendency.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out that this is not entirely unprecedented in the animal kingdom.
Okay.
I assume you have watched the BBC Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Nope.
Oh, you have not?
No, I haven't. Like, as I may have stated before, I sort of stayed away from Douglas Adams out of fear, A, that it would be as good as everybody said, B, fear that it wouldn't be as good as everybody said, and C, fear that I would somehow be infected by his style, or D, that I would find him such a comic genius that I would live the rest of my days in just meek, stooped fear that I would never be as good as he was.
Oh, well,
it's very cool. it's a full-time job protecting as delicate an ego as mine.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
You've seen it?
Oh, yeah, I have the tapes at home.
Okay, so you know what I'd be referring to then when I mentioned the restaurant at the end of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Are there suicidal fish at this place?
No, suicidal cow.
Cow.
Dish of the day. An animal bred that wanted to be eaten.
Oh, well, that's nice. At least karmically. It's probably less...
Actually, I found it quite disturbing.
Well, I suppose so, but that's one of the reasons, of course, we eat the animals with impunity, is that they're not aware of the other end of the bargain.
Yeah, and that was kind of the whole point behind that bit. I would recommend at least watching the BBC version of it. It's not quite as funny as reading the book, or books.
I think it's I have this inbred reaction against anything that seems cult-like authors. And even though he's far more popular than that, I know. When I first heard about him, he was always described in cult-like terms, and I just stuff like that gives me the hives.
I got something to tell you.
Yes, sir.
The diner is becoming almost a cult-like phenomenon.
Well,
let me get the robes.
In that case, I fully... Yes, the candles, the whole bit, the gongs, the symbols.
Sure, yeah.
We'll have the procession tonight. All right, I'll break down and read it on that odd chance that someday I'm actually able to carve out enough time to crack open a book again.
This creature is not in the books, though. He's only
in the book.
He's in the book?
Yep.
Oh. Okay, well, then he's in the book, I guess.
I have a trivia question then, too.
Okay. Oh, but I do have just one other thing that I wanted to toss out at you.
Yes, sir.
I found out about a new probe that they're going to be sending into space that I think we all need to be concerned about.
After Cassini, of course, named after the fashion designer Oleg Cassini.
Exactly.
What are they going to be sending?
They're going to be sending the Guess Probe.
The Guess Probe. What a great name for a probe.
Yes.
Its very purpose is right there in the big question mark emblazoned on the side of it.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure what planet they're sending it to. I could make a guess, but I'm...
But you know, I worry about this probe, and you know why?
Why?
For reasons unbeknownst to me at this moment, once my wife and I, when they were having a white sale at Dayton's, meaning you go in and buy sheets and towels that are anything but white, we bought some Guess towels. Now, I like to take, like most people, I like to take the one end of towel in one hand, the other end in the other, and just sort of do my back. You know, it beats just walking around the house until it evaporates or having the shirt soak it up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm alone in this. It's a common part of the
toweling
off procedure. After about 5 episodes, this Guest towel, which was about what I made, cost about what I made in a week of waitering back in 1978, split like the britches of somebody who's wearing a size too short. So I'm worried about the workmanship. It's entirely possible that, you know, if this thing has to break, it has to use parachutes like the Pathfinder did, that they'll just simply shred in the orbit.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm worried.
That would be a concern, but there's actually another concern that you should even be, you know, that's an even greater concern.
What's that?
You know how Cassini had a load of plutonium?
Yes, sir.
Guess has a load of zagnesium.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now, given that zagnesium has properties beyond the ken of man, including the ability to just, you know, contribute to the laws of physics, if that canister were to be aerated in the atmosphere and people were to inhale minute particles of zagnesium, it would thereby empower those people with all of the things that zagnesium gives you. I don't want to think what happens if that element gets into the lungs of, say, Australians, or Canadians for that matter. Canada could just simply be entirely transformed into a race of superheroes overnight. This is worrisome, Lon.
That would change the balance of power.
Yes, yes it would. When is the gas rocket going up?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, I'll be there to
make a guess.
As a good Luddite who takes his scientific information entirely from the headlines of newspapers, I'll be there protesting.
All right.
Thank you, Lon.
Well, have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's see. We've got a stool open if you want to hop on it. 646-8255-646-TALK. Heidi from St. Louis Park. How are you tonight?
I'm not bad.
That's good. That's an honest response. I like that.
Well, my husband and I are redoing a house, so he's got me here every night till 2 a.m. scraping, peeling.
Oy.
I know.
Call the police. Get out, woman.
I'm telling you, I want to run, but it'll be worth it.
What are you scraping and peeling?
The walls, the floors, he's taken out ceilings. I think he's gone mad.
Do you have 18 layers of wallpaper?
Oh, and this house was painted light blue, lime green, hot pink, and then they painted in the wallpaper, then they'd wallpaper again.
Yeah, mine was painted seafoam green. And I find it every... Well, it was the color of the day.
Yeah, we have that. That was on the fireplace, underneath the layer of purple, I believe.
Yeah, as I've said before, I'm convinced that the previous owners didn't just paint. I think they stuck a hose down the fireplace, down the chimney, and turned it off when it started to come out the upper windows. You know, when it started to come out of the attic, they said, all right, because everything is seafoam green.
Even the woodwork.
Yeah, I mean, if I was to find some dishware they'd left behind, it would be coated seafoam green.
That is funny. Mm. I called about the sprout because that whole thing kind of bothered me, having that little sprout and the big tall giant in the dress. And
yeah.
It always kind of made me feel a little odd.
Where did Sprout come from?
I don't know.
Where's Sprout's mom?
But I don't know. And he's always hanging around with the Jolly Green Giant.
Always hanging around with the Giant, and the relationship between the two was not... Was it Batman-Robin type relationship? Was it... did he buy Sprout somewhere?
I don't know. It could have been a Nambla thing.
I don't want
to... I mean, I know that's sick, but...
Good Lord. Well, the whole idea that when the lights went off and the cameras were over, you know, the Jolly Green Giant turned anything but, you know, and whipped Sprout back into his small little room where he had to sleep on a straw pallet and, you know, eat nothing but cold peas.
Run and fetch the Jolly Green Giant coffee and things.
Yeah, the whole bit. I mean, he may have been, you know, if the Jolly Green Giant was a Fagin-esque type character, then there may have been some...
Could be. But... It was weird because he was so, like, I don't know, 70s drawing style, too, you know?
Yeah.
The Giant was still from the 50s.
Yeah, you're right. The Giant still had all of the... He was anatomically correct. He had actual muscle definition. But yet he had this blob of a cohort.
Yeah. They never said if it was his son, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I've got to... There had to be a Mrs. Jolly Green Giant, because there had to be a female Green Giant out there somewhere. Because if not, it might explain the laugh. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, I know. See, it was malevolent.
Ho,
it scared me.
Ho, ho. Well, I think after many, many years of deprivation, I think your laugh would just be a hollow, not malevolent, just ironic. You know?
That's true.
Yeah. I got a break, Heidi. Back to scraping.
Thank you.
And don't breathe the Zip-It too much because you'll start to see colors.
Oh, great.
Go with the ether.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
John in El Dorado Springs, Missouri is coming up next along with the rest of the faithful patrons here. You can hop on if you like. It's 646-825-5646-TALK, 1-800-962-0792. I'm James Lilacs, and this, as ever, is The Diner here on KSTP AM 1500.
Van conversions. Forget the psychedelic painted item that may or may not have made it to San Francisco with a load of guitars.
And they're not the lumbering motel rooms with shag carpeting like so many RVs.
Today's conversion van is an agile, well-finished vehicle built on a brand new, greatly improved GM van. The Savannah, one that you can drive to Cub Foods as easily as you can to Colorado.
Because GM converted the converters. They set new standards for van conversions. Only a few made it. At Valley Olds, we use Regency and Waldock. In our minds, the best in the business.
What do you get for under $26,000? Less than the price of many sport utility vehicles? Oh, stuff like a 350 V8, anti-lock brake, seating for seven, separate air conditioning for front and rear, separate radio CD sound systems with headphones, television, and VCR.
And right now, GM will give you a $2,400 rebate on any 96 Savannah van conversion. These vehicles are true traveling luxury, and as my daughter said...
It's just a Disney movie from here to Duluth.
On Cedar Avenue in Apple Valley, Jim Paul's Valley Olds Pontiac GMC, a car dealer for the times.
Hi, this is Kevin for the Minnesota Office of Tourism. You know, there's a lot of speculation as to why fall is the best time to travel. Personally, I think it's the leaves. Not only are they great to look at, they make a great sound when you step on them. Well, you ever tried to crunch a summer leaf? They're entirely too soft. Well, sure, you could put some of those styrofoam peanuts beneath them, except then you'd have a yard full of styrofoam peanuts. Nope. For leaves as loud as cornflakes, you'll just have to wait until fall. That's also the time to call for the Fall Color Report. You'll find updated information on leaf color conditions at state parks and forests throughout Minnesota. It's current, faxable, and best of all, free. So do your feet a favor and call 1-888-TOURISM. That's 1-888-TOURISM. And keep those packing pellets in a box where they belong. This is Kevin. Happy trails.
Brought to you by the Minnesota Office of Tourism and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. This morning, in grand journalistic tradition, Brower and Korzenowski asked Deborah Norville the tough, probing questions.
The bed I had to sleep in there at NBC wasn't real comfortable. I didn't have a lot of support.
Would you dump all over Bryant Gumbel, please? I understand that, so it's got to be
a part of the whole. How's that?
Is Bryant Gumbel jerk or not a jerk?
Oh, come on.
What?
Talk to his wife. She knows him better.
We'll take that as a jerk.
Brower and Korzenowski, weekday mornings on AM 1500, KSTP.
Gee, I can just see they're tuning in all over Minneapolis now.
This is Art Bell, your host of Coast to Coast AM. On Coast to Coast, we've got the news many times before the rest of the media. We'll take your calls, talk about headlines, UFOs, paranormal, whatever's on your mind. Forget the X-Files. This is real life radio for the intelligent listener, Coast to Coast AM.
Art Bell is live and nationwide all night on AM 1500 KSTP.
The anniversary of the execution of Marie Antoinette. 10% off all cakes tonight. James Lilac's back here at the diner. Trying to figure out exactly the true story behind the Jolly Green Giant. John from El Dorado Springs, Missouri. How you doing?
All right.
Are you listening to us on the radio or on das Internet?
On the radio.
Well, glad to know we go all the way down there.
I have an answer for you where the Jolly Green Giant is in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
It's Blue Earth.
That's right, in the fine town of. You've been there?
Yes, I have.
So you've seen the actual large life-size, as far as I know, life-size replica of the Jolly Green Giant.
It's very large.
Yeah, and it's laughing at Iowa, I think, isn't it? I think it's pointed south, laughing at Iowa. Or maybe it's, I don't know if it's laughing at Iowa or Canada. It can't possibly be laughing at Minnesota, of course.
No.
Nothing to laugh about here. What took you to Blue Earth?
My job. I lived in Minnesota for a year.
Uh-huh. And your job was?
I went around to the Walmart and Sam's in the state and worked on their roof.
Oh. You mean Walmart and Sam's just had their own itinerant roofing crew?
I work on the HVAC units.
Oh, what are those? Oh, heating, ventilating, and air conditioning.
Right.
I see. Okay. So did it shock you when you first came to the town of Blue Earth and saw this huge, jolly green giant grinning maniacally at you?
Yes, it did.
Did it make you think that perhaps in the past other giants had come along and this was Blue Earth's way of saying to those giants, don't come here, we've got a giant too?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Minnesota, did you get to see any other large statuary in Minnesota? Because we're chock-a-block with this stuff.
Yes, I did. I saw Paul Bunyan.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, there are a couple of Paul Bunyans. There's Bemidji and Brainerd.
Right.
And the one I think in Bemidji, the one in Brainerd, I believe, is Paul and Babe, of course, his trusty blue ox. And the one in the other town, if I remember right, is a big, huge fright. I mean, this guy's grin looks like a mass murderer. And when you come in as a child, he says your name. You walk through the gates, and of course, the guy at the gate says to your dad, what's his name? He said, no, it's James. And Paul says, hello, James. And if you're not running, shrieking back into the car and going through without opening the door, you don't have any sense in your head. It was a terrifying moment in childhood.
I think that was the Brainerd one.
The Brainerd one?
Because
okay.
He told me to get off his little plastic squirrel. Yeah. And I almost died. Oh, Jeremy from Minneapolis, please get off my squirrel.
He knows who I am. He's more than God. He's more than Santa. Yeah, in a grudge match between Santa, God, and the Jolly Green Giant and Paul Bunyan, I'd put my money on the Paul Bunyan.
He's got the axe skill.
Oh, yeah. Well, do you are you doing the Walmart thing down there in Missouri now?
Yes, and in Kansas.
And in Kansas. Well, I first ran into Walmart when I was working down south in the late 70s. I had no idea what they were, no idea that they were about to take over the country and sort of kind of drive small towns out of existence.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But, well, anyway, glad you answered the question. I'm giving you an honorary lemon toothpick, and I appreciate you dropping by from so far a distance.
Well, yeah, I really like your show.
Oh, thank you, John. Appreciate it. And if you got internet access, you can read the column on the web, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just go to the StarTribune.com. World Wide Web, and that'll take you to the wonderful world of my website.
All right.
All right. Talk to you later, John.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, all the way to Missouri. That's great. Yeah, let's see. Mark from Maple Grove. How you doing?
Hi.
Yes.
You know, I'm actually from Belle Plaine. I'm just in Maple Grove to stay overnight when I do belly dumping. This is Mark's Trucking. But
belly dumping?
Yeah, I haul dirt on that 610 out here.
They call it belly dumping?
Well, put dirt in the thing, and then it just opens up on the bottom. That's why they call it a belly dump.
Okay. I like learning jargon from different industries.
But I live by Belle Plaine. This is Mark's Trucking. But anyway, that Jolly Great Giants in Le Sueur out there in the hillside there and the little sprout, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
The
sewer plant, that closed down a few years. Some major corporation bought them out and closed that down and just had the one in Blue Earth, and where's the other one somewhere in Minnesota that took over the...
Who was it? Was it Grand Met PLC, Grand Metropolitan, that took it over?
Oh, golly, I hate to mislead you. It might be.
Yeah, I think it was. If it was, this is an interesting fact. Grand Met, which bought Pillsbury...
Yes.
Just bought Guinness Beer. So the same company now owns the Pillsbury Doughboy and Guinness Beer.
There's a commercial I want to see.
Precisely. So you were saying, Mark, that there was a Jolly Green Giant in Le Sueur as well?
There's one in the hillside there. There's still, even though they closed the plant downtown, they got the big man, the dad, and then the little sprout.
Well, we don't know that they're actually related. You know, he could have bought them on a trip to Mexico.
I thought maybe the missus passed away and they took him down. I don't know.
That could be. We never heard about the missus. That's what makes me worry.
I always wondered. My dad moved to St. James, and my dad said it was a guy that had always come up there every couple of years and take the markings out because they put something else on there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. Probably so.
They do that with some kids, apparently. I don't know how they do it, but they climb up there somehow, I guess.
I'm sure it's a high school ritual in any town that has a large statuary to deface it in an interesting and unique way to your generation.
I enjoy talking to you because you're a very interesting person.
Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening and dropping by tonight.
Have a very good evening.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
I think Mr. and Mrs. Giant had an argument. That's why you don't see Mrs. Giant in public
And that's why the peas grow really well in a particular part of the valley, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Well, come to think of it, anywhere where the Jolly Green Giant spent any amount of time would, after a while, the... fertilizing aspects of night soil being what they are, and you imagine a creature of that size would provide adequate
fertilizer,
nitrate-based
nutrition.
Maybe Sprout just came off his back someday. He was looking in the mirror, and there was a little head, and the next day a couple of arms waving out, because he's not human. He's plant-like, so there may be some odd plant reproduction.
You think he pinched him off like a zit?
That's
why he looks the way he does. He's a little sprout. He's not fully grown yet.
I'm trying to...
He's disgusting.
Well, as disgusting as the last commentary, yes. Hey, Scott from Hopkins, how you doing?
Hi there, James. I know the true story of the Jolly Green Giant and Little Sprout.
All right.
Okay. I had the chance to go and work down in Le Sueur and work with the company where the old workers from Green Giant.
Right.
Where they now work. So they filled me in one day. The true story of where the Jolly Green Giant came from, where Little Sprout came from, and the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Jolly Green Giant is Santa Claus' illegitimate son.
That's what they told you at the plant.
Right. And so that's why he goes, ho, ho, ho.
Uh-huh. And did they say this to a room full of adults?
No.
Okay.
So Santa Claus threw him out of North Pole. He came down. He found this little valley with all these little tiny people. And so now he's the man.
Well, wait a minute here. Okay. Wait, no, hold on a second here. What's the other story that runs through Western civilization about a war among the giant creatures, and one of them is cast out of the kingdom and sent down to a lower place?
You don't? I have no idea.
We're talking...
Satan?
You're
talking... You're trying to tell me that the Jolly Green... Oh, that's right, he is.
Well, I'm telling you, if that's the case, then what we had was another war in heaven. You had your God / Santa with a beard, right? And all that stuff, all powerful...
Yep.
Jolly Green Giant, for whatever reason, is dissatisfied, doesn't want to serve, would rather reign in hell than serve in heaven, so he gets cast down into the valley, which for all of its fecundity, for all of its growth, is actually just as much of a stinking brimstone pit as the pandemonium to which Lucifer fell. So, I think we're retelling an age-old struggle here. This may be a myth that goes far deeper than anything that the food company.
You notice that the Jolly Green Giant never does any work. The little village people do.
Oh, yeah, he spins not, neither does he toil, but I'm sure he gets the royalties.
Right, and you notice that all of a sudden Sprout appeared.
You're right.
Well, see, the Jolly Green Giant one time got a little frisky with one of the village girls, and that's where Sprout came from.
This is what they told you?
Yeah.
For God's sakes, man. Well, first of all, I think it is logistically impossible for the Jolly Green Giant to have gotten frisky with one of the village girls. They're putting they're putting a nice spin on what sounds like some sort of horrible sacrificial ritual. All right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's more to it than we can possibly think.
Well, you just never know. That sounded very legitimate to me at the time. I just didn't like
going
there.
No. Do the math.
Mm-hmm. Do the math?
Do the math.
Do the math.
Do the math. Let's
his size, is, her size. Yeah.
Okay, he's the size of one of those little people, but he's green and looks like the Jolly Green Giant.
Oh, the giant.
The giant, Scott. The giant. Now, put yourself in the villager's place, all right? Every once in a while, around 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, you hear the thump of the giant. You hear his laugh. It's a little bit more slurred than it was before.
Yeah.
Oh.
So where is he getting this booze from?
Oh, he's got stills that likes it. Probably from Wisconsin. That's what he keeps Wisconsin for.
But you know
And that's why you've got the special pit dug in the back where you put the daughters. When you hear the thump on a Saturday night and the Jolly Green Giant is heading into town, down they go in the pit. You put the boards over it. You put the hay over it so he doesn't know because one of his hideous, unspeakable rituals is about to commence. And if that's where Sprout came, then Sprout truly is the offspring of demonic
Damien,
forces.
But he also is ho-ho-hoing for a very special reason.
I'm almost afraid to ask.
It's actually a ho-ho-ho is a very is an attuned laughter because he knows the true secret of why people buy his product.
This is more of the story they told you.
Right.
And what is the true reason?
Because in the vegetables there's like an addictive narcotic, which wants you to go back and buy more of this expensive added stuff.
This is what they told you at the plant.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, I'm drawing the line. I don't believe you.
Okay.
I think, yes, How much
did you have to drink that day? Did they drink on the job regular?
I had to drive all the way back to Minneapolis.
All right, Scott, I thank you for introducing me to the true demonic element here. I appreciate it, buddy.
And then you actually believed it for a few seconds, or didn't you?
No, I believe it all now. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Bye.
No, I'm serious. It's clear to me now. It's a retelling of the war in heaven. Do the Jolly Green Giant is one of the minions of the devil. Just because he's a comforting green, nice spring color, doesn't mean that there's probably not a cloven hoof under those sandals. John from Foley, how are you tonight, John?
Hi. I was going to say about three things. Number one, that Paul Bunyan and Babe, that's up at Bemidji.
Bemidji, okay.
Number two, I was coming back from back about 1970 from a session of 69 it was, delivering soap samples door-to-door for drive detergent.
Mm-hmm.
And we came through on the bus, came through Le Sueur, and saw that big south-facing Valley of the Jolly Green Giant sign, mm-hmm. which looks about five stories high.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a statue, it's just a...
No, it's a billboard.
Okay, and it faces toward Iowa?
Towards the south.
Okay.
Thirdly, you know, it's kind of a, what do you call it, ritual among high schoolers, senior class, to paint their year on the water tower or what have you.
Right.
By the way, talking about the belly dump truck?
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a live bottom truck?
A live bottom? No, I haven't.
It's a semi with a conveyor belt in the bottom.
Hmm.
And it dumps out the rear.
What do you know? Live bottom and belly dump. Oh.
Yeah.
So anyway,
live bottoms are generally used for delivering like a windrow of asphalt or gravel for road building.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've seen them then, yes.
Yeah.
If you were to strew broken glass on the road in order to slow down the approach of the Jolly Green Giant, you'd use one of those.
No. By the way.
Yes, sir.
I think the Jolly Green Giant originated in an advertising campaign for their peas back in the 1930s or so.
That would strike me as about right.
And he was not exactly the well-proportioned figure that he is nowadays.
No, much lankier.
No, he was much more stocky.
Really?
Yes. Huh. He was rather ugly.
Well, for public consumption, then they've given him a makeover.
He was a giant.
Satan comes in many pleasing shapes and varieties, John.
Now, I was going to ask just a dumb question.
Mm-hmm. There are no dumb questions.
I liked your second column in the Trib. I think it was Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
On the science page.
Yes, the one on my life as a rocketeer.
Yes. Luckily, you didn't discover zinc dust and sulfur.
No, thank heavens. Or I'd be picking up my dining implements here with wrists.
Yes, yes. Actually, that is if you don't make it too large, it's in diameter. It is a decent propellant.
Well, those days are behind.
Scientific American in one of their articles suggested it.
Hmm. Well, if I ever, when I have a son, we'll blow ourselves up together. I got to take a break, John. Thanks. Bye. Thanks. Bye-bye. Coming up next, Chris from Robbinsdale, Jim the Cabbie, and Eric King of Kinko's. You, too, can join by if you like. James Lilacs here at the diner on KSDP AM 1500.
Making plans just got a whole lot easier with City Pages Annual Manual. It's free and available now on newsstands. City Pages Annual Manual is your free guide to living, doing, and spending in the Twin Cities. Annual Manual has it all, from shopping malls to dance halls, bakeries to galleries, bowling lanes to Vikings games. City Pages Annual Manual is available now at over 700 locations, including track and trail at Rosedale Center in the Mall of America. City Pages Annual Manual. Now there's no excuse to stay at home, except to plan where to go next.
So, you call yourself spontaneous, impulsive, carefree, a bon vivant. No daytimers, Franklin planners, or time management seminars for you. However, we know the truth, don't we? You're really just scattered and disorganized, but that doesn't sound nearly as exciting. Well, you may be used to flying by the seat of your pants, but don't even think about it if you're flying out of the airport. Parking there is tight these days, particularly on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and the lot may be full. Then what are you going to do, Mr. Spontaneous? Now's the time to get your life in order. Plan ahead and allow extra time when you park at the airport. If the ramp's full, have another lot in mind. Better yet, before you leave for the airport, call the airport parking hotline at 826-7000 for current parking conditions and new parking rates. That's 826-7000. It's not too late. You can reform.
Summer is at an end, and the change of the seasons means only one thing. Gopher hockey is back.
Center right in front there. Spehar, he scores!
No time to rest for the Gopher hockey team. Next up, National Power Maine. Hi, everybody. This is Dan Terhart. Join me along with Glenn Sonmore and Rob Lear for all the action. The Gophers and the Black Bears in an early season battle of top 10 teams. Right here on your Gopher hockey station, AM 1500 KSTP.
Chris, how are you tonight?
Good, James. Well, I'm feeling better after my unpleasant encounter with the phone company of the other evening.
What happened?
The phone company, after I called your show, they triangulated upon my position, as you may recall.
Oh, wait a minute. This is the Chris who called us about the tones.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, about how the fact that the phone company can tell how many coins you're putting in the payphone by the tones generated. You were really upset. You were sobbing, and then you were cut off. I was very worried.
Yes, but we better not talk about that right now, because I don't want it to happen again. It was rather unpleasant.
Well, you heard the official explanation as to why we were knocked off the air.
Yes, and
the other time we were knocked off the air, they said it was a laser beam shot from a craft from outer space.
Well, I do know that the phone company owns some space-based lasers, so that
that isn't too far from the realm of possibility.
That's just too obvious an explanation. It's obviously a lie. That's just too patently obvious an explanation.
Well, I'm going to give you another scoop tonight.
Okay.
The Jolly Green Giant,
mm-hmm.
that's a secret government base.
A mobile base himself.
Yes.
Is he some sort
the
of...
All inside the giant.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's really cool. I mean, they've got all kinds of experimental things. It's rather a shrunk-down version of Area 52. I think they call it S5 or something.
An automaton is what you're saying.
Pretty much. And it's somewhat based on alien technology. Some form of robotics. You've heard of the Greys? Well,
oh sure, he'd be the Greens. Yeah.
These are the Greens, yes.
Oh my lord!
Some people have even referred to them as the Men in Green.
The one very large man in green.
There's more than one. They work shifts.
Well, you see, here's the thing that mystifies me, though, is that the whole mythology, the whole story of the Jolly Green Giant, as we've come to understand it through the medium of the advertisements. Is that he seems almost medieval in the world that he controls. You know what I mean? I mean, it doesn't seem to be heavy industry in his valley. There doesn't seem to be anything beyond the 16th century. From what I've gleaned from the ads, the giant, through a reign of terror, has been able to freeze the society at a rural, serf-like, agrarian level.
Well, that's
terror, probably.
That's the giant's plan.
Okay.
We better start collecting, anything besides green giant vegetables.
Oh, you know what, Chris? I just realized something. I just realized where Sprout came from.
Where?
Oh, well, I'm going to have to... I've got to digest this news for a little bit here. After the news, we'll tell you.
I'm not sure I want to know.
Well, you're going to have to stay tuned, buddy.
Okay,
thanks. All right, talk to you then. Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, I know now where Sprout comes from. Oh. Worrisome news. Worrisome thought. Worrisome for what it says about America. Jim the cabbie, how are you doing tonight?
So you don't remember the commercial where the green giant found the sprout in the Brussels sprout patch?
Oh, that's the story they're saying, huh? Yeah, right, uh-huh. Yeah, and storks drop babies down chimneys. Well,
I'm sorry, but he opened up the Brussels sprout and the sprout was inside.
I think we ought to read these commercials and the advertisements and everything else as sort of a collective myth. And we have to look at the actual historical truths behind them. These things get twisted and contruded in the retelling.
This is very true. I understand that my suggestion for WD-40 has cured Jeremy of his affliction.
Well, I hate to say this, but Friday night, not the way I'd like to spend a Friday night, but indeed I was hosing him down with massive quantities of WD-40, and as you predicted, the grass suit, which seemed to have bonded permanently to his skin, slid right off. There was an unfortunate side effect, though.
He forgot to go take a shower.
Well, no, it didn't matter.
I'm sorry. The WD-40, if you go into the shower, will repel the water so it won't come off.
That was pretty much the problem. He was utterly unable to generate friction for about 3 or 4 days.
Oh, yeah. I bet his breath smelled real good, too.
Well, it was funny because he'd pick up a plate, it'd fall. He would get his remote, it would squirt out of his hand like a seed. It was sad for a while because he couldn't pick up any implement to feed himself, so we just had to mash his face down into plates to get sustenance. Eventually, of course, after we threw a lot of sand at him and let the grit just sort of work its way in, he's back to normal now. But he was just utterly without friction, a man without friction, as Robert Musil might put it.
I drove by and I noticed he had a bandage on his head Monday morning. He didn't slip in the shower or anything, did he?
I don't doubt. If he wasn't on the phone right now, he's giving me a nasty look. And he's shaking his head many times. I think he slipped and hit his head many times.
Many times.
Yeah. But the grass suit did come off, so at least, because he was starting to, frankly, have that wafting aroma of a compost heap in the height of summer. Yeah.
Hey, did you mention to him that I couldn't pick anything up for like 2 days?
Yeah, and you fell in the shower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, pal.
Well, it worked, didn't it?
Which is better, the lump on the head or the grass suit for life?
Well, if you'd asked him that on Saturday...
Mm.
Yeah.
I had to think about that one for a second.
It would have been a puzzler.
Yeah. I hope he keeps it around because I understand that the strain of grass he was covered with leaves very, very tiny seeds in the ears.
Oh, Oh, my. So
I'm not worried.
So when he gets to be an old man, he won't have wispy gray hair coming out of his ears. Well, he'll have wispy green fronds coming out of his ears.
If it roots in his ears, it'll rapidly spread and recover his body.
I kind of like the idea of a grassy perfusion coming from his ears. You could braid them.
It'd be like the Green Knight.
Well, actually, if it was dense enough, you could sort of carve it into topiary shapes.
Ooh, I could have a little bonsai.
Yeah, bonsai. Oh. You could have little Princess Leia Danish earmuffs, for the matter.
He'd be the very unjolly green giant-eared cook.
He's the surly green giant. What?
I got to go to a break here, Jim. Thanks, buddy.
Good night.
Talk to you later. On the other side of the news, we've got Eric King of Kinko's, Rob from Maplewood, and Glenn, who has some news on Sprout. I've got news on Sprout. I know where Sprout comes from. And like I said, what this says about the Republic... I'm hesitant to say.
But children to bed.
But I will. Yeah, perhaps so. It may
frighten them. Right.
James Lilacs here at the diner on KSTP AM 1500, St. Paul, Minneapolis.
From ABC News, I'm Bob Hart. James Michener on James Michener.
I think I have a passion for telling a story.
James Michener told many stories over the five decades of his career as a best-selling author of some 40 books, sprawling novels like Hawaii, Sayonara, and The Drifters. Michener died at home in Texas Thursday. ABC's